Welcome, everybody, to Revive Health's Daily Briefing Live for Wednesday, June 10. This is our 30-minute review of the latest, most important news, resources, and advice for health system marketers and communicators who are dealing with the COVID-19 crisis. I'm Chris Bevelo, Health System Practice Lead at Revive Health and your host for the show. I am joined by Chase Kleckner, who is Senior Marketing Manager at Revive Health and our show's producer. Hello, Chase.
Hey, Chris. Good to see you again.
Yeah, good to be back. We are also joined today by Jenny Cordina, who is partner at McKinsey & Company. Jenny is partner at McKinsey's Healthcare Systems and Services Practice. She's been a partner since 2003, and she leads consumer healthcare. As part of her work, she's been leading McKinsey's insights into the healthcare consumer since 2006, and more currently through the COVID-19 crisis, including six surveys of 1,000-plus consumers each since March 15th. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Chris and Chase. Thank you for joining me, having me on your show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining. We're looking forward to diving into the latest survey here in a little bit. As with each show, we're going to cover the latest news on COVID-19, how it relates to marketing communications in hospital health system world, provide a couple of helpful resources, and share what we're seeing and hearing from our comm professionals across the industry. We want this to be an interactive session as much as possible, so we'd love your questions as we move through the show. If you have a question for Jenny or myself or Chase, just use the question queue in Zoom. Throw it in there at any point, and we will take time either as we go or at the end of the show to answer as many as we can. You can also use the chat function in Zoom. You can use that to talk to other attendees, and Chase will be using the chat function to place links to resources that we are talking about, so you can look for those in the chat function as well. But again, if you want to ask us a question, make sure it ends up in that Q&A queue. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search for Revive Health Daily Briefing Live. As always, we post a recording of the episode at the end of the day. That will be at our website at thinkrevivehealth.com. And you can go to thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19 for all of our COVID-19 related resources, which we'll talk a little bit more about in a second. A couple of reminders at the top of every show. We are not experts on COVID-19, the disease, the pandemic itself, clinically or scientifically. So we won't have advice on that. But we do have advice on marketing communications, especially as it relates to hospitals and health systems. Just remember, everybody's situation is different. So take our advice and kind of pull it through the filter of your local community or organization as the pandemic hits all of us in different ways. So let's go ahead and dive in. As we do every show, we start with a case count. We do that just to kind of keep tabs overall with where we are at in this country with COVID-19, because that kind of impacts how we think about hospitals and health systems at a high level in terms of marketing communication. So we use the Johns Hopkins tool. And when I refresh the tool at the top of the show, globally, we are at 7.2 million confirmed cases and 412,111 deaths globally. When we look at the United States, we are at 1.9 million. So 1,982,336 cases, and we are up to 112,093 deaths. We are starting to hear about potential upswings in various states. We're starting to hear about Arizona and some issues in Phoenix, South Carolina, North Carolina. So something we'll be keeping an eye on over the next couple of days. In terms of resources, again, remember to visit our website, that COVID-19 communications hub. That's thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19. You will find reports on the research we've done at Revive Health. You will find copies or recordings of these shows. You will find our content, our biweekly roundups that we send out, all that content, and then a lot of information on what we call rapid recovery, which is the period all hospitals and health systems are in at this point as they've reopened to whatever degree they could elective procedures and are trying to rapidly build their volumes back up to recover from the hole that they've been in, and also the challenges they're facing as COVID still impacts us and the fears of consumers and all of those things. Also, we will refer you to McKinsey's COVID-19 website. Chase will put a link to that in the chat function, so you can go right there. We'll also include that in the show notes. Specifically, you can find the latest report there, helping U.S. health care stakeholders understand the human side of COVID-19. That is also something you'll find there, and we'll provide a specific link to that. So with all of that, I went through that all really quickly. So Jenny, we have plenty of time for us to talk about what you're bringing to the table. You guys at McKinsey have completed to this point 6 consumer insight surveys around COVID-19. 4 of those are available on the website that we just talked about. But let's talk about your most recent one that came out a few weeks ago. And let's start with the first theme that sticks out to you that would be valuable for the audience that we have here today. Nope. I think you're muted.
Oh, sorry, I'm muted.
There you go.
I was saying, wonderful.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, so I was going to say it's been really helpful to see the trend by doing the research over time since mid-March, because it really gives you a sense of how things are changing for consumers, both in terms of their daily life, employment, which obviously has implications for how they consume and engage in the healthcare system as well. And so we've been trying to really take a look at both. And to your point, one of the first things that's been pretty important that we've seen in the data is obviously from the implications of many people struggling with financial considerations, losing jobs, decreasing hours of employment, things like that. That's had an impact on not just their health, but on their mental health. And so a lot of our research, one of the things that we have found is this notion of looking at the whole person and understanding how COVID-19 has affected that. And it's been insightful in 2 dimensions that I'll highlight. First is that since we began surveying consumers in March, the good news is we actually seen an improvement of about 11 percentage points, but we still have about 53% of the respondents in our last survey from this weekend that said they were either anxious, depressed, or both. And so what we're seeing is similarly with that, a pretty high level of distress associated with COVID-19. Now, what's particularly interesting is when you dive into respondents that have had some sort of mental or behavioral health healthcare provided over the past 12 months, we actually see that level of anxiety and depression actually goes into the mid 80s. So our most population that has the most need is also experiencing the most distress and anxiety and depression out of the entire population. And so it really speaks to the importance of engagement with this population through the pandemic.
Yeah, you know, I can add some anecdotal kind of fodder to that. My wife is a therapist. And when this started, she started offering, of course, virtually free therapy to anybody dealing with COVID-19 who was a frontline worker. And so she had a big burst of activity. But then she noticed it really dropped off, and not just the COVID related, but overall therapy. And as she dug into it, she saw throughout the therapy industry, a lot of providers seeing a drop in actual activity for therapy for folks. And what they're attributing that to is the financial impact that you mentioned, that a lot of folks have either lost insurance and so they're not covered anymore for therapy, or they fear the loss of it, or they don't even want the out-of-pocket expense because of those fears. So at the same time, you know, as you're talking about this need for mental health support has grown, like all healthcare, right? We've seen people pulling back. That's also impacted folks attaining therapy. So just so much work we have to do there.
Yeah. And I think just building on what you just said, and it's really interesting your wife has had that direct exposure. We are absolutely seeing that about 12% of people, and it's been pretty consistent, have either lost their health insurance or are expecting to do so. And that's obviously hitting many of those people that would be on government programs like Medicaid much harder. And so to your point, they are experiencing this gap in coverage or concern about their ability to pay for it. And what was on the good side, we saw some of this in the jobs report earlier this week, but we are seeing in the latest survey that we did this past weekend, the first uptick of people actually returning to work that was pretty meaningful. And so I think, you know, that's definitely a positive sign, but we're still far from where we were in the pre-COVID days. I think the other piece I just highlighted is on the telehealth side, we actually have been looking at the way that people are getting care through the pandemic, whether in person or through telehealth. And for mental health, it is actually the highest rate of the, you know, type of care that we tested was through telehealth. In our most recent survey, it's been going up over time. And we're now up into the low 70% of care being provided for mental health issues through a psychiatrist or psychologist who's actually been through telehealth.
Yeah, and we're seeing that as well with our clients. Telehealth just exploding in all ways. I'm sure your data shows that as well. Some of the numbers are just staggering. The Health Partners, which is a big system here in the Twin Cities, I think we've talked about this. They were featured in, I don't know if it's New York Times or Wall Street Journal, it was about a month ago. And they went from zero virtual visits to 70,000 in less than a month. And we're seeing other just ridiculously dramatic jumps, not just for mental health, but overall. And so I would assume we're going to continue to see that. And it's just so natural for mental health. Well, I think most therapists would prefer to see people on a long-term basis in person. Certainly it's preferable to be able to access that care through virtual visits when you can't do it otherwise.
Yeah, we'd absolutely agree. And to your point on the trajectory, we ask respondents that have upcoming care scheduled how they have it scheduled. And interestingly, we do see it dropping from the telehealth. So what's interesting is to your point, from our research prior to COVID-19, we only saw the number of overall decisions specific to mental health in the low, you know, 10 to 15% of people saying that they had done it. That, to your point, now jumping up just to a very extreme percentage. And we actually now see that dropping. So for folks that had mental health appointments moving forward, it was closer to around 50% that said that the future appointments are scheduled via telehealth versus the lower 70s that we're seeing right now. So there is a strategically and just how you want to think about how you provide care to patients. You know, you've had this opportunity to introduce it. We are seeing that people that have now experienced it, a much greater likelihood of scheduling it in the future or being willing to do it in the future. But then how do you maintain that if you want to maintain that as a part of the care provision that you're, you know, providing a particular patient.
So you did say though that you're seeing a slight decline. Is that overall or just mental health?
It's overall, and that the numbers I gave were just for mental health, but it's overall what we're seeing is the care scheduled in the future coming down from the level of telehealth visits that we're seeing through the pandemic. So already that shift of going back is happening. The question now is how quickly will that shift happen and how far will it go? I think a lot of people, and this kind of goes into one of the other topics, is just comfort with going back to physical sites of care. And, you know, we are seeing across sites of care much less comfort of going in person. And so that will definitely have an impact on when people transition from telehealth to in person. But the number of people, as we've been talking about, that are interested in it and more likely to use it in the future is still dramatically higher. So even as that comfort level returns, I don't think we can estimate exactly what that will look like, but we definitely, it'll be quite a bit higher than, you know, 10 to 15%, but quite a bit lower than 70%.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important point because it's, you know, as we get back to a place where fears drop and it becomes more normalized to go back in, I think we'd still want to see a high level of adoption of virtual care because it's better. It's almost like a win-win-win-win all the way around. It's a win. There are certainly things that mental health or more broadly that you want to see your caregiver in person or you need to, and that should always be available to people. But there are so many other things that really don't require an in-person visit. And so it's far more convenient to do it virtually if you're comfortable with that. If you're having to wait for a physician for an appointment in the waiting room versus in your own home, that's a different experience. And so hopefully we'll see it, like you said, not go back down to the teens, but stay at a relatively high rate. And one of the things we've been telling our clients is for that to happen, you have to make sure that providers maintain their level of enthusiasm for it, because as they become more in a place where they can receive patients in person. We don't want them to just abandon virtual visits wholesale. They should be used wherever they're appropriate, wherever it's more efficient, wherever the consumer prefers it. And so there's going to probably need to be some education and communication with providers to make sure that they don't just go, oh, well, that was just for COVID. We don't need that now. It should be leveraged wherever it makes sense.
Yeah, and we're seeing the same thing. We did some provider research, and to your point, we saw similar. The good news is the interest and experience obviously helps them too, but you know, things like reimbursement, how they want to provide care and all that, I absolutely agree is going to have a huge impact on the supply side, so to speak, of this equation, right? Not just the demand from the consumer, so to speak. And okay, one other thing you just kind of made me think about as you're talking about this too is we found that about 12% of consumers told us that they actually haven't gotten care they need through the pandemic due to various reasons. And some of that is because of not feeling safe going to different sites of care, not being aware of telehealth options and the like. And so back to this notion of communication and outreach really is just so critical, because consumers oftentimes, or patients, don't really understand what options exist for them or how they can get the care that they actually need.
So your research is showing the same thing ours has, which is there's still fear out there, right?
Absolutely. And we looked at this notion of feeling comfortable going back to different sites of care and when they would feel comfortable doing so. And what we found is, depending upon the site of care, it ends up being in the range of 25% to 35%-ish aren't feeling comfortable going back to various sites of care. Much more comfort going back earlier to places like a PCP or clinic versus an inpatient or ER, for example, which you can, you know, make sense. Right. The only place I will say we saw that increasing comfort does exist is at in-home care. Mm-hmm. Not by a lot, but more people are more comfortable with it now than less comfortable. So that was the only place we saw a little bit of a deviation there. But a lot of that lack of comfort really has to do with safety or their perception of what will make them feel safe. And I think what was really interesting in the data that we saw is a lot of people are highlighting pretty basic safety measures, things like sanitization, hand sanitizer being available, wearing masks, keeping the 6-foot distance, a lot of things they're probably getting from the TV and other sources of information, things that they hear a lot, and they're applying that to not just healthcare sites, but we actually see the same, essentially the same things that matter for healthcare sites also in their daily life. And so this notion of they're kind of looking for it across the board, and most providers are doing all these things. The question is whether or not the consumer is aware of it. And so one of the things that we actually asked is, where are you getting information about, you know, COVID-19 and who are you hearing from? And what we found is less than 20% of consumers have said that they have heard from their doctor, hospital, or pharmacist.
Crazy.
And obviously, I think most providers would say, we're doing so much more communication than that, right? How is that possible? But in the consumer's mind or in their perception, that's what they're getting.
Yeah, that's just a thread that we've heard throughout as we've been doing this show. We've got anecdotal evidence, but just, you know, our research from the beginning reflected the same thing. People want to hear from hospitals and health systems and doctors, but then at the same time, we're just not doing it to the degree that we need to. One thing I want to ask you, Jenny, and I don't know if your data hits this or not, but you know, as things started reopening in May in terms of elective procedures, most of the clients we have said, hey, we're refilling the beds pretty quickly. We're up to 60, 80% pretty easily. But the challenge is what's after that. And so we talk about this kind of risk reward calculation that people make unconsciously when it comes to fear. So if I was scheduled for knee surgery and COVID hit and then my knee surgery got put off and I'm hobbled and I can't walk around and I can't go up and down the stairs, when the opportunity comes back in, you know, it comes back for me to go in for knee surgery, I'm going to overcome those fears. Right? I'm more likely to overcome those fears because I'm in a really bad place, even though we've seen people put off like stroke care and all that. But same fear level, and we're talking about an annual physical, or we're talking about like a diabetes 6-month checkup, or a skin cancer kind of scan. Those kind of things, I would likely be more likely to say, I can get by without doing that, which is where the challenge comes down the road, because all of that upfront care, you know, leads to the to the procedures that you need from a financial standpoint, the surgeries. Are you, have you seen anything in your research that kind of speaks to that risk reward calculation, or, you know, the degree to which people are willing to kind of overcome their fears based on the thing that they need?
Yeah, so we've looked at that in two different ways. So maybe I'll kind of share both ways. One is just trying to understand what would get them to reschedule or schedule care earlier. And so, you know, we asked for people that had scheduled, rescheduled or scheduled things a little bit further out, you know, what would actually get you in more quickly. And the top thing that people said was their doctor actively contacting them to reschedule or to set up time with them. So that notion again of they really want to hear from the doctor. That was the single biggest thing. And we literally tested this in every single survey and it stayed at the top of the list in every single one. And so that outreach and proactive outreach is number one. The second is a lot of these safety things and really communicating it. So the next set of elements really had to do with variations of different types of safety protocols being in place in the facilities to make them feel comfortable in going back such that they are limiting any risk of getting COVID-19. But what was interesting is things like not allowing people, you know, not allowing testing for COVID-19 or things like that weren't high on the list. So I think a lot of the things were this notion of sanitation and safety. And that's, again, something that is something that can be more easily communicated. And most of these entities have put in place, frankly. So that's kind of one way we looked at it. I think the other way that we kind of looked at it is trying to basically understand for people that the 12% I was mentioning that haven't gotten the care they need, asking them why they haven't gotten the care they need. And a lot of it had to do with that fear that you're getting at. And so really addressing these things I just mentioning matters a lot. And some of it also had to do with other factors in terms of saying, even though I have this issue, I think I can wait because it's not painful enough or, you know, it's not urgent enough yet was quite high on the list as well, as you can imagine. So again, the big takeaway to me was these first things that we were talking about really address the vast majority of that risk reward equation you're talking about.
So everything we're talking about here is really related to kind of physical or mental health as a, you know, the context of that in terms of the challenges and fears. The last thing I think we want to talk about is the other major challenge that's emerged out of the COVID-19 crisis for patients, and that's the financial side of things. So talk a little bit about kind of what you've learned in terms of how to support consumers as they're transitioning health insurance or lacking it.
Yeah, and so I think with that one, there's a few things. One is more on the insurer side than the probably on the provider side, but really thinking about benefit design, we think is really important, as well as for employers to think about in terms of their benefits. So a lot of the things we're seeing that when we ask consumers, what support are you looking for and from whom? They're really looking for things like waiving co-pays and deductibles when it comes to getting tested for COVID-19 or being seen if they think they might have COVID-19. A lot of them also don't understand the co-pays and deductibles they have for things like telemedicine. So whether or not that provider's providing that information or the payer or the employer, they need to understand those things and, you know, the payer, whether or not that's the government, the insurer, or the employer should really be thinking about the benefit designs that they're putting in place to make sure that people are getting the care they need when they need it. And that's, I would say, one big thing. I think another thing is consumers also, and I know providers oftentimes do this, but when somebody is self-pay for whatever reason, because they either have a $5,000 deductible or they are uninsured, and in some sense, they're very similar, making sure that what a self-pay person needs to pay or what those costs would be up front is really important. A lot of people don't understand that they could, you know, these things might not be as expensive as they actually think they are. So I do think that is an opportunity for providers to think about as you're dealing with people with these large co-pays and deductibles, or frankly, just don't have insurance while they're in that transition, to helping them figure out how they can get the care they need for, whether it's on a payment plan or reduced amount or whatever that solution would be.
Okay. It's just, this issue isn't going to go away. I mean, we saw everybody, it seemed, was surprised by the last unemployment report that came out that showed it actually dropping, but that's, I think, you know, most folks assign that to we're reopening as a country. So people that couldn't go to work now are back. There's some restaurants, that kind of thing. But I don't think anybody expects the unemployment to get back to where it was, you know, in 3 months. It's going to be a long grind. And so as long as that's true, and we continue to see companies suffer financially because the whole economy is depressed, more layoffs come, it's going to be an ongoing issue in terms of the ability to pay for care and the level of insurance people have. It's just not going to go away.
Yeah. And maybe two things that we have found that are pretty interesting in this is one of people that are uninsured, we are finding that more of them are considering getting health insurance due to COVID-19. So and depending on what survey we've done, anywhere from about 30 to 40% of the uninsured are now actively reconsidering whether or not they should have insurance. So it is a really good moment in time for different healthcare stakeholders to really be connecting with this population as they're just, frankly, their receptivity is a bit higher. And then for the folks that have lost insurance, a lot of people, there are a portion that are moving on to another family member's insurance, a portion that are looking for Medicaid, but there are a significant portion in our surveys that essentially haven't yet decided what to do. And it's actually a pretty substantial portion of folks and, anywhere of about a quarter of the population in that range. And so also helping them understand what their options are. Understanding Medicaid for many people is confusing. Am I eligible or am I not? Am I eligible for ACA? And then what are my, subsidies or not, right? And so it's very confusing. And this is also a place where providers can really help consumers understand what options might exist for them when they lose their coverage.
Right, right. All right. Well, I think this is a good place to wrap. We're at the end of the show. Believe it or not, that went super fast. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us. Good.
Thank you. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah. And we definitely encourage people to go check out the surveys and the information that McKinsey's reporting. So you can, again, visit that link that Chase provided. If there's anything you'd like us to cover, always let us know. Chase, thank you, sir.
Absolutely. Good to have you back.
Yeah. Tomorrow we have Elizabeth Musson, who's now I'm off the guest. I'm off the hosting again for a day. Elizabeth's going to step in and she's actually going to be talking to Don Stanziazzo, who's chief marketing officer at Geisinger. So that'll be a fantastic show. We are making a change. We should might as well announce it now. Friday will be our last daily podcast. We'll talk more about it Friday. We're going to move to a different format. We're going to go to weekly. Actually have a little longer podcast so we can dive a little deeper into things. We'll talk about that shift on Friday's show. But we still want you to join us throughout this week. And then as we continue the show, make sure you check out our website for our resources at thinkrevivehealth.com /COVID-19. I've done that right for like 2.5 months. That's the first time I mixed up a slash and a dash. Yeah, that's sad. Go to iTunes, go to wherever you can get your podcasts, and hang in there. Everybody's still doing really important work. We're not through this crisis, probably not going to be through this crisis for quite some time. And we're keeping our eye on some of those surges that are happening. So some of you may be going back into more difficult situations. Just remember what you're doing is so important to your organizations, to the patients you serve, and to all of us as we try to get through this whole crisis. So thanks for joining us today. Come back tomorrow and we will talk to you then.